Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. How do we normally start this, Jeff? I don't remember.
You know, that's a really good question. I think literally every time we say, welcome back to the podcast, this is Tell and Basin.
My name is Jamie Dew.
And you're... No, I'm Jamie Dew.
You're Jeff Fontenot.
Yeah, we're I'm so Jamie. Glad you put you're, up with our foolishness.
Yeah. That's all right. Well, welcome back to the podcast. I'm Jamie Dew.
And I'm Joe Fontenot.
And this is The Towel in the Basin. And we're super humbled and grateful that you folks listen to this. This is great.
That's right.
And not necessarily the content's great.
So but we've been working through
the fact that you listen is great. That's pretty
We're
cool.
great.
No. We're doing something on yes. servanthood so, here, Joe.
And humility.
Right.
Other people's humility. Okay. Right.
We're talking about everybody else.
So we're looking through your book on humility and servanthood. We're looking at chapter 3.
It's a great way to start this, yeah.
So considering all of that, we're going to ask, that's right, we're going to ask this question, what does biblical servanthood look like? So not us. All right.
Yeah.
Beyond really that. Not. So you write this, you know, question or this statement in here. You say, we cannot follow Christ without a posture of servanthood. Seriously here, you know, we start out kind of joking and so forth, but seriously, like, can you explain that? Like, what does that mean? What do you mean a posture of servanthood?
Sure. First of all, chapter 3 is designed in this book to essentially give us a picture of this theme of servanthood throughout the Bible. And, you know, you're going to have these very clear calls in the New Testament where Christ points to himself and notes the way he's serving his disciples or others, and then calls his disciples, those who are following him, into the same thing. What I don't want folks to think, though, as we, throughout the book, as we look at this theme of servanthood, though, that this is merely a New Testament kind of gospel theme that's going to occur. Actually, as I jumped into this, and this chapter kind of evolved. This chapter and the next chapter were originally, when I proposed the book to B&H, they were originally proposed as one combined chapter. And as I got into it, I was like, wow, there's just so much more in the Bible about servanthood than just these couple passages in the New Testament. And so, you know, decided to make the move there to split those apart, do a chapter on each. And in this chapter, we're just simply trying to trace that theme of servanthood throughout the whole thing. And so as we start looking at the patriarchs and the prophets and the apostles and things of that nature, what we find is that all along, I mean, this has been who God's called his people to be. And so with that, you know, I think the case can be made there. Whether or not I did it very well in the book is a different question. But I think the case can be made there that this is what it means to be a follower of Jesus. There's clearly more than just this, but this is an essential component of it. And so by essential component, that means that you cannot be the follower you're supposed to be without this posture and disposition. And by posture, you know, really, there's a chapter in the book that talks about the virtues of a servant. I believe that's chapter 5, maybe. And this theme of virtue is an important part of the whole discussion, and it really gets to the question of posture that you've asked me about. In fact, one of the next books I hope to do in along this vein of books is a book on virtues and vices about servants of the Lord, and to really try to unpack those better for our listener. But virtues are characteristics. So the reason I frame it this way is it's you can't follow Christ without the posture of a servant, is because ultimately what you're looking for here is not necessarily a do and a don't, though that does come into play. But what you're looking for is a kind of character, right, that I think is embodied in certain kinds of postures. And I'm not talking about necessarily physical postures, like you're walking around mopey and, you know, kind of humped over or something like that. I just simply mean that your disposition is not haughty. It's not arrogant. You're not peacocking around. You're not strutting around everywhere you go. But that you are relating to other people with a humble disposition, a disposition that's trying to serve folks, and that your heart and your mind are properly postured before God in the way we live our lives. That's what I'm trying to say. And what I'm trying to claim in this book is that all along throughout the Bible, this has been who the people of God have been called to be. And one thing's very clear, Old and New Testament, God hates pride and he loves humility. And so not surprising, therefore, we're going to find throughout the Bible that those people that God has used in the most mighty of fashions have been folks that were servants at the end of the day.
Is servanthood something that I can do like before I feel it in my heart? In other words, is it something that I can create out of habit, or I can just simply almost analytically study the scripture and say, okay, this is the thing I do? Or is it something that comes out of a heart feeling? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, how do you even get started in this is really kind of the essence.
It kind of goes back to that last question when you talk about virtues. I mean, so generally speaking, questions about virtue come up in morality and ethics and things of that nature. And so when you're dealing with morality and ethics, you're thinking about do's and don'ts. So, right? But another approach to ethics is a virtue approach where you're focused not so much on the do and don't, the deontological approach. You're good by virtue of keeping a rule or adhering to a rule. So it's kind of, in that sense, yes, it's do's or don'ts. But in the virtues, it's about character and dispositions and qualities of the person. So to your question, can you do this? This is where I think the development of these characteristics and the development of humility, it arises out of practice. So to answer your question, can you be a servant before you feel in your bones? Absolutely. Because it's at the end of the day, it's a choice that you make. It's not a feeling that you have, right? Nothing in this book, nothing in the Bible and its call on our life is calling us necessarily to feel any particular way at all, right? But it is calling us to act in certain ways. And the way we tend to understand the way virtues and characteristics are formed in us is that through right action over long periods of time, those actions begin to reshape our hearts. So ideally, I give myself to this practice. I make that choice to lower myself. I make that choice to act in a servant manner. And then in the doing of that and in the submission of my heart and my soul to the Lord, he begins to rewire my heart in certain ways that this is now what I want to do, right? In my own life, I mean, look, I'm not saying I've mastered this or conquered this or that I am the quintessential. I'm not at all. But what's been interesting for me as I've gotten older and I've gotten farther and farther into my career and gotten to do lots of different kinds of things, what I have noticed is that I find just as much joy, if not more joy, in helping someone else accomplish something or get an opportunity than me myself accomplishing something or getting that opportunity, right? That's for example, I see this in like publishing stuff. It's really cool to publish a book, to write a book, and to do all that stuff. That's really fun. I do admit that I like doing that kind of stuff. I enjoyed the process. I enjoy writing. I enjoy, talking with publishers and editors and things like that and thinking through projects. That's just fun to me. What I have found more enjoyable, though, on publishing stuff is helping somebody else get that first opportunity to do something. So, you know, I've published most of the publications I've ever done have been things I've co-authored or co-edited with somebody. Three of those were actually somebody else being the older brother helping me get my foot in the door. And now I like to return the favor to the next generation, so to speak. So anyway, all that to say, this is just one kind of example. I've discovered that it's joyful to get to help somebody else do that. And so that's just an example of, you know, we're called to lower ourselves and to help other people. And then as we do that, God gives us a joy in that. And that's all I'm really trying to say there.
So, that makes sense. Something you said earlier about this concept of servanthood is not just a New Testament concept. In this chapter, in this book, chapter 3, you go to Hebrews 11, the Hall of Faith chapter, and the author of Hebrews is recounting all of these heroes of faith. And you highlight Abraham and Moses, Why do you think those are good examples of servanthood, Abraham and Moses in particular, or just any of these Old Testament characters?
Well, I mean, there's lots of characters that we could point to. You mentioned, and I mentioned in the book, and you're drawing these out about Moses and Abraham. I mean, but think about both of these leaders, both of these servants of the Lord. They, in both cases, they essentially make choices to put the call of God on their life ahead of their own personal comforts and privileges and all these types of things. There's this line in Philippians chapter 2 about Jesus, who being in the form of God did not consider it robbery to be equal with God. In other words, he has this rightful claim to divinity, and he is the divine Son, and yet he never felt like he had to hang on to all of his privilege and all, but instead he humbles himself. That's Christ, okay? I think you see the same thing in Abraham and Moses. I mean, Abraham, think about him. He leave your father's house. This that may sound like just this passing comment there in Genesis chapter 12, but in fact, I mean, he's leaving quite literally everything he knows, everything he's comfortable with, his inheritance, all of these things to go essentially be obedient to the Lord and to serve God in the way that God's called him to do. That is a servant right there, just like Christ was. Moses, my goodness, even more so, right? Choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than enjoy the passing pleasures of sin in Pharaoh's house. Talk about going from a really great life situation. He chose rather to identify with God's people, to suffer with them, and to do what God had called him to do. That's servanthood. That's both of these figures are these really early examples and foreshadowings, I think, of the ultimate submission that you're going to find in Jesus Christ. And so I see that in Christ, and I see that same pattern in these two people. And so I think that I think both of those are really good examples of servanthood for us.
Yeah, you know, as I think about Moses, for example, you know, we can't help but look back chronologically, and as we do that, we see the Promised Land, we see the crossing of the Red Sea, we see all these like amazing things, right? And Moses is a leader, he's talking to God on the mountain, he's the only one, all of this sort of thing. But at the time he called him, he was none of that, he knew none of that. He was essentially, what, 80 years old or something like this. He'd had this long life in the palace. He'd had this long life after this sin, this killing this guy. He ran away. And then he had this new life, this new career. He had a family and all this kind of stuff.
Right.
And he gave it up without any picture of any of that.
That's right.
It's kind of an interesting picture.
Yeah, just simply believes and trusts that the Lord, what he has for him is good, and is willing to step away from all those things so he can serve God in the way that God's called him to. So he's a good example of it.
Yeah. And another point in the book, you describe King David. So there's another Old Testament, obviously, example here. You say this, quote, he was humble, obedient, and full of devotion to God. So humble, obedient, and full of devotion to God. So is that an irreducible list? In other words, like, can you be humble and obedient but not full of devotion? Or, you know, can you be some of these things but not other things properly? Or do you have to be all of that to be one of those?
Yeah, it's a good question. I guess the short answer is I don't know exactly, but I would tend to think that probably not. I've never thought about that question before. So I would tend to think probably not. Simply, if nothing else, because those tend to go hand in glove together. Those tend to rise and fall and go alongside each other. When you find one, you always find the other. And then you can certainly see the logical connections between them as well. If I'm obedient, well, then that means I'm devoted to something. If I'm devoted to something, that means I'm giving myself to it, which means I'm obedient. And if I'm willing to do those things, there's certainly a measure of humility inside me. So I do think that those go together very naturally and organically, such that as I put myself in that posture, again, to go back to that phrase that we've used, as I put myself in that posture, these are the kinds of characteristics that God is cultivating in me as we do that.
Yeah. And it's kind of, as I was reading that, One of the things that stood out to me is sometimes we can focus on humility, for example, mm-hmm. but maybe we're struggling with obedience
right.
to something, yeah. to a person, a boss, or whatever, you know. And it's almost sort of a false picture we're developing in our head if we're thinking of ourselves, say, I'm a humble person. I mean, that's kind of a weird thing to say, you know, but let's just for the sake of argument say, I am definitely one of these things.
Mm-hmm.
But that other thing, you know, I struggle with that. It's almost like it's hard to say that you're really good at one if you're not really good at the other.
Right, right, yeah. So again, I do think that they rise and fall together. If I'm a humble person, if humility is taking root in me, then I am placing myself last and others first, or the Lord first, which means that's a form of devotion. So, you know, but that's not to say, I think going back to the original question there, can you be one of these without the other? The reason I say, I don't know exactly. Look, I do think that these are separate concepts from each other, but they are interrelated mm-hmm. concepts to each other, right? So, the act or the character that a person possesses is in fact going to manifest all of these characteristics, mm-hmm. even if the characteristics mm-hmm. themselves have some distinction from each other, overlap, but yet remaining distinction.
Yeah. Well, thanks for walking through this chapter, Jamie. I'm looking forward to getting into the next one as well, to talk a little bit more about the character of Jesus and so forth. But until then.
All right. See you next time.
Hey, everybody. This is Jamie and Joe again. If you like this podcast, would you leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts? That helps other people find it.
And if you have any questions, we'd love to hear about them. Just go to jamiedew.com/questions and send them in that way. And we'll take a look at the most frequently asked questions and give them a shot.